what you are basically. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence itself.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mind Podcast, episode number 55. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I've got a really interesting episode. We've got a first-time guest. His name is Ezra Millington. Now, I was introduced to Ezra by a mutual friend, and he says, Mike, you've got to meet this guy. He's a close friend of mine. He's extremely caring, very gentle human being, but also he's a very passionate human being, and he has a gift, and that gift is spiritual sight, which is the name of tonight's episode. Now, what is spiritual sight? Well, essentially, it's a kind of communication in which a person will get visions which help them to make sense of the world and to make spiritual sense of the world. So that's the topic of tonight's episode. We're going to leave this introduction short because I really want to allow the story to develop naturally as you're listening to it throughout the episode. But I think you'll find this one absolutely fascinating as I did. And also, I think it will help you to interpret the world in a different way, perhaps, because maybe you don't see the world through the spiritual lens, or maybe you're trying or struggling to get there. Well, then this episode could be really useful for you. It could help you to reflect on the spiritual realm and maybe encourage you to start exploring it some more. So members, please head over to parallelmind.com to sign in to listen to the full episode. If you're not a member yet, please consider joining us for this and all the other fantastic episodes we've released thus far. We've got plenty more coming. In closing, I hope you're all well, healthy and happy. Happy Easter to you all, and thank you so much for listening. I'll see each and every one of you in the next one. Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mind Podcast. On tonight's show, we have a new guest. His name is Ezra Millington. And I was introduced to Ezra by a mutual friend, and we actually did a podcast together previously. And I'll talk more about that later because that podcast never got released and I want to lay out that story, but we'll save that for later on in the episode. Essentially, I was introduced to Ezra because I got told that he had some gifts and that he was somebody that had a very strong spiritual awareness and that I would get on with him. Now, when somebody says something like that to you, you literally have no idea what you're going to get when you meet that person. It could go completely wrong. And inviting someone on a podcast, for me, I have to make sure that this podcast is something that's going to be of value to people, that the voices I put out there are authentic and genuine. But I have to say, having met Ezra once before in this podcast that no longer exists, which, like I said, I'll talk about later, I really do want to share his voice with people. So I'm honored to have you back on the show, Ezra. Thank you for joining me again. We're going to talk about spiritual warfare tonight. We're going to talk about prophecy and much, much more, I'm sure of it. But before we get started, Ezra, can you just give us an introduction as to who you are and what you're doing in life right now?
Yes. Mike, thank you for the introduction. My name is Ezra Millington. I'm residing in the province of Quebec, recently moved within the last year with my wife and two kids. So recently, I guess there's been a lot of changes, but I'm residing in Quebec now. I run a business called Total Man Development. So it is a sports focused organization where we work with athletes of all different sports, you know, personal training, getting them to their goals. We work with a lot of pro athletes, amateur of that nature, but we also do a lot of teaching as well. So a major focus we have is in what's called mindset training, where we really focus on the personal development of these guys and helping them transition and navigate through life.
Okay, that's awesome, Ezra. But what led you to this career? I know you was an athlete in the past, as was I, as was our mutual friend. I'm pretty sure that's a key part of your story, but maybe we could go back even further to your childhood and just kind of get a flavor of what led you to becoming who you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the biggest thing, like I explained before, was the adoption. So when I was very, very young, I was actually at 3 weeks old, I didn't tell you this last time, it was actually at 3 weeks that my name was changed to Ezra. So I didn't share this last time. I shared the adoption last time, but at 3 weeks, my dad, who adopted me, was coming home from work. And he said, while he was riding the bus, he heard a voice that said, change his name to Ezra. So obviously, not having a belief in God at the time, to go through with that, it must have been, a powerful conviction that he had. So at 3 weeks old, my name was changed from Tristan to Ezra. That name really became the direction for my life in terms of how I dealt with the adoption, finding out I was adoption, how I navigated through that, how that affected me. And then, one thing led to another, where the second major encounter that I talk about happened at 8 years old. And what happened at 8 years old was basically my first real vivid encounter with the spiritual realm. And that's when I had a vision of my future and, what I would be doing in my future. Mind you, being so young, there was still so much personal development and things that I would have to go through in terms of like getting a greater understanding for that. But those were the two major incidents that I shared last time, along with the name change, which led to what I'm doing today.
Wow, that's really interesting, especially what you said about your dad. And Ezra itself is a biblical name. It's actually one of my favorite names. When I read the Bible, that's the name that stood out to me as the one that I took to most. I don't know why. It's always been something that I've always adored, that name, Ezra. It's a very beautiful name. But just backing up, Ezra, before we get to discussing that period of your life as a child and that realization that you had about adoption, can you just talk about where the adoption came from? Why was you adopted? How did your parents find you and actually choose you to adopt? What was the story behind all of that?
This is actually recent information. I met my real dad. I'm 35 now. I met my real dad at 29. So it was at the latter stage of my life that I actually heard the story accurately. My dad had met my mother, when they were in their 20s, and ended up having me, but my dad didn't know. So because my dad and my mother were just, kind of fooling around, I guess my mother chose not to tell him. So he never knew of me. He never thought anything of it. My mother hid it. At the time, she was, I'm not sure if she was on a visa, but she was over in Canada from Barbados. And she was in school to be a nurse. So she was staying with a Jewish family. So obviously, with the Jewish religion, it was very strict. So for her to have been pregnant, she would have had to leave, right? She would have had to drop everything and go. She believed that she would have been kicked out of the house or whatever. So she said that she had like hid the pregnancy the whole time, like nobody knew. And she ended up having me in her room. She was staying in a room in that house. And she ended up having me like in the room, unassisted, like nothing. Like, so the whole pregnancy, right up until the birth, was completely like hidden. Nobody knew, even the people she was living with.
Wow, that's absolutely unreal that she managed to hide that pregnancy and had the birth by herself. And it makes me think as well of birth trauma. Like you actually were the product of that secrecy and that deception, and then this adoption happened. But just going to I don't know how you term it, Ezra. Do you call your parents who you grew up with your real parents? How's best for me to term them when I'm discussing it so I don't mix up the two for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Real parents, yes.
Yeah, so your real parents, Ezra, who adopted you, how did they come to adopt you? What was their reason for adopting? Were they unable to have children and they decided, right, we're going to adopt someone and you was just the one they chose?
My mom and my dad were trying, for a long time. My mom was unable to have children. So they had other kids. I remember there were two other girls that I think came before me and my sister. And for whatever reason, they had to go. So I guess for a period of time, I'm not sure how long that period was, but my mom didn't have any children. And obviously, after the two girls left, she still wanted to raise kids. So that's when myself and my sister came into play and were adopted.
Wow. So, and did you come to together at the same time, Ezra?
I believe so. Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
interesting. Why do you say I believe so, as though this story is kind of not fair? Have you not had these discussions and like laid this out in your own mind?
No, I and again, I say believe so because, I'm trying to go way back and, like, piece things together. Being 35 now, I'm trying to go back to my childhood. I am pretty sure that we were adopted together, like we both came into the home at the same time. Me and my sister are 5 months apart. So, yeah, like we, I ended up growing up with my sister. She is like a little bit European, Aboriginal, like a whole bunch of mixes that she has. So we were, yeah, growing up in that home in Newmarket.
And what's your relationship like with your parents now? It's very, are you still very close to them and in touch with them all the time?
Yeah, we talk. They just came up here not too long ago. Yeah,
Awesome.
I'd say we have a tight relationship, tighter with my mom than with my dad, but good relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I worked with a lot of young people who had serious issues around identity as part of my career. In fact, I ended my career in fostering, but my entire career was working with people who had been fostered, adopted, removed from their parents for all manner of reasons. And I kind of know a lot about this, but not from the perspective that you've got. I know it from the person who's coming in to support these kids. But what I can tell you is that even children who I worked with who were adopted at 1 hour old, they came out. And that they were already scheduled for adoption because that mother was a heroin addict or on drugs. So literally, they were like, "You're gonna have that baby, and that baby's been taken off you, and we've got a family where it's immediately going to." And I remember a kid I worked with called Mark, who was a great kid, but he had a lot of issues. He was adopted at 1 hour, and he wasn't told that he was adopted till he was in his late teens, so like maybe 16, about just about the time I started working with him. It was about a year before 15 he got told, and I worked with him at 16, and he had a ton of identity issues, but these issues never came on at the point when he got told he was adopted. He had them his entire life, even though he didn't know. Even though it happened at an hour, there was something within him, in his subconscious, deep-rooted, that knew something wasn't right. And maybe he picked up on it, maybe it's spiritual, I don't know. So I just wanted to lay that out and just hand it back to you. Does that resonate with you, what I just said?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even how you were saying earlier, when I was explaining my sister and myself being adopted, and me having to try to think if, like, we came at the same time or if it was separate. Like, really, my entire life, for the majority of my life, like, things were a mystery. Things were very, and I really use that word intentionally. Like, things were very, very mysterious. I strongly identify with what you said about just knowing something is off, knowing something is wrong, being able to sense, almost sense deeper than, like, those around you, having almost like a different sort of connection, a different hunger or need for things. Yeah, I strongly identify with that. Yes.
And what age was you, Ezra, when you finally found out that you was adopted? And can you kind of maybe just set the scene for me and listeners? Like, what was it like? How was you told? And what was that immediate after effect once you did find out?
100%. So, grew up, I would say, a normal childhood. Like, I mean, aside from the adoption, like, things were great. My family was big, loved to travel. My parents put us in sports, good schools and all of these things. From that standpoint, like, things were normal, right? But again, internally, it was a completely different, story, especially as I got older, and that internal pull, that internal knowing became more evident. I remember one day, just my mom sat me down, and she just broke the news to me, and she was like, "Yeah, like, I'm not your real mother."
Was that kind of the word she used as well? I'm not your real mother.
Yeah. At that point, I had a lot of questions, not only a lot of questions, but I was also getting a lot of dreams. And the dreams weren't like necessarily good. Like they were a lot of dreams that would cause a lot of fear. Almost as if the situation where my mom would break the news to me, almost to try to like mess up my ability to receive that, or maybe cause, you know, what I would receive, like take it the wrong way and just kind of add to the trauma. What the dreams did, it tried to create like a distrust where like I may view, you know, the people who adopted me as different than like a loving family type of thing. So there were the dream aspect, but then when my mom told me, I always use the example like someone pulled the rug of familiarity out from under me. So it's like in one instant, everything I thought I knew nothing. Like it's like everything went blank in my mind.
Wow, that's, it resonates a lot with me, but for different reasons. I don't know if PJ told you anything about me, and I certainly have never discussed it on the podcast in any detail at all. But I had an experience when I was 12 where I woke up and I was downstairs getting dressed for school, and the radio was on. And I lived with my mum at the time. My mum and dad had separated. I was getting ready for school, radio on, just like any other day. And I heard on the radio a name, and it was my name. And it said my name, and then has been arrested on a yacht in the middle of the Atlantic with $20 million worth of drugs on the yacht. And
Wow.
I was young. I think I was actually a bit younger. I was maybe about 9 or 10. Like you, I don't have this story pieced together. And I've never had anyone to discuss it with. So I've got these similar kind of blank spots, but I remember it. And I said to my mum, that's my name. And she said, and her face went white. And she was like, no. She's like, it's, forget it, it's not. And then I went to school that day and somebody said, did you see on the radio this morning? Did you hear? And I was like, oh, what is this? I was in this kind of surreal moment where I'd lost equilibrium. And then I got home that night and my mum sat me down and she said, your dad has been arrested. She said, your dad's going to jail, basically. And it was my dad who, but I had the same name. I was junior, he was senior. And then I learned that my dad was, well, I didn't learn at the time. I learned as the years went on, and I've tried to piece together my childhood that my dad was actually a very high ranking gangster, like as big as you get in the UK. And all of a sudden, all of my experiences as a child, which were very strange, which I thought were normal, I learned were not normal. And I had that same experience of I had no idea who my family was and who what I had experienced, but it was very different to yours. And I don't want to say it's the same, but what you said just really resonated with that. That's like immediately what I thought of. Like, I know the kind of feeling, and I'm sure listeners will too, of having that rug pulled from you and just not knowing where you are and what's going on. And then as a child, it's completely different to being an adult because you're not ready for that, are you? You don't have the tools to deal with it. And actually, when I was younger, when I experienced that, I didn't have the support, nobody. And I got kicked out of school. I went down a really bad path. And everyone just said, well, you're a bad kid. You're just like your father because that support didn't exist back then. So handing it back to you, Ezra, did you get support? Was there anyone there to kind of help you deal with this?
I don't want to say no because I had great support systems, but it is the mystery that was born in that moment that caused me to not recognize or not be able to trust right away the support system that I had. So, you know, from there, high school was shortly after. And I mean, we all know the peer pressures that, you know, come with high school, especially surrounding identity. It just created a lot of anger. It created a lot of anger. So I guess my inability to cope made it very difficult for a lot of people to get through to me. But the amazing thing is that there is always someone, I believe, who can be that person in any situation. So for me, that person that I may have needed then came later on. So the major impactful people that would really help turn the ship around, it would come later on for me, especially when it came to spiritually. That's where my life is. That's where my life has always been, is in the spirit.
And what was it like for you at school, Ezra? Was there any professional support that tried to step in and say, listen, we want to talk to you. You know, here's something that we can do, a mentor or something like that? Or was you just, you know, left to your own devices and you had to figure it out? And if so, what did that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, with the anger, with the anger came, you should try anger management. The anger management was useless, and the reason I believe it was useless is because really the way I see that, like things like the anger management and things like that, like they were systems based. It was like government funded type of thing. So it's like, you know, if that makes sense, I'm hoping it makes sense to those who may hear this, but you know, it's almost like the people were following a script versus, and really the script that they were following, like, didn't really allow someone to see me, like my true character or my true need or my true trauma. Because, like I said, my biggest breakthrough in terms of someone recognizing me would come a lot later down the road. So, still being in high school and you know, not really benefiting from the anger management, I ended up leaving. Football became that staple for me.
Wow, it's amazing how many young men have been somewhat saved by sports. You know, thank God for sports, because there's so many of us that would have fallen off completely had it not been for sports. For you, it was American football. You know, these sports, people who have never done them, or maybe I would say people who have never grown up without a father, without a male role model, or have had issues around that, like you did have your father, but you had this mystery, as you put it. Sports gives you that focus and it takes you away from doing some of the more detrimental things. For me, I was unfortunate that it didn't come till I was in my late teens, and I wish I'd have found it earlier. I wish somebody had put me in the gym or the boxing ring or sent me to football like you. But can you tell us what that was like for you, Ezra, once you found football? Like, how did that change things? Was that when your anger started to dissipate, or was it actually a place where you could express that anger out on the field?
Yeah, no, exactly. I would say it was a place where I could express the anger because even actually before football, I was playing basketball. So basketball was, I guess, really the first. Well, that's not true. That's not true. I played soccer younger and things like that, but I think the greatest influence was basketball, and that was something I started with. But the anger really showed I needed a different sport. There were very few basketball games that I finished because I was just so rough. So the football, you know, being
Was you on the bench all the time getting sent off?
exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, just fouling out of the game before the game ended. So the football was the best fit for me. One thing I want to just add this. It's in my mind. I just want to add this that it really was a lie that really tried to work on the trauma that I already had was just the whole issue of race. So when I was in elementary school, I was the only Black child, like the only out of maybe like 2,500 kids. And, you know, not knowing who I was at the time and life being, you know, so mysterious already, that made me very vulnerable just comparing to certain things that I would hear from people, whether family, or things like that, who would try to make the race thing a divisive thing. That's something that really caused a ton of confusion that would also get cleared up for me down the road, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I just wanted to add that in there.
Yeah, I'm glad you did add that because it's extremely relevant to the world today. Back then, it was a thing, but it wasn't front and center, rammed down every child's throat who's not white. And it's created such a hostile world for all of us. And it's been forced purposely front and center. And I know this is something we'll come back to when we talk about spiritual warfare. Like, we're in a spiritual war. I think we both agree, but I really want to get into that and about how we're being manipulated psychologically to enact warfare against each other. But let's just pull it back up a second, Ezra, because you already mentioned that you had an experienced age day that was you saw as a spiritual experience. And I don't want to sidetrack us from kind of discussing your story as to how you kind of developed. So do you want to bring that in now, or do you want to continue talking as we are about how you made it out of that period and you actually found some outlet for your anger?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So football was that outlet. I'll never forget. We had a coach who was instrumental in my life. I still keep in touch with him to this day. We had a coach come over from the U.S. He came from Memphis. So he was a running back, NFL running back named D'Angelo Williams. He used to play for the Carolina Panthers. He was his strength coach. And I remember being a basketball player still at the time and walking through the hallway. And this big, large, like just jack guy approached me in the hallway and he's like, "Hey, you, do you play football or do you want to play football?" And I remember so vividly that exchange, that brief exchange, just being impacted by that, just seeing this alpha male, really, just seeing an alpha male father figure type just approach me and just kind of take me under his wing. That was huge for me in sticking with football, focusing on it, and starting to believe that I could take that somewhere. So that was a huge outlet for me and a huge help at that point.
Yeah, I think it's actually impossible to put into words just how desperate young men are for a father figure if they don't have that already. So tell me a little bit more about this guy. Like, how did that relationship develop, and what kind of things did he teach you that you wasn't already getting taught?
I want to add quickly, like, again, I was adopted, okay? Two great, great people. Like nothing in any way against my parents, nothing in any way against my my father. But even from a young age, I could see that my father, there were something wrong. Like, I remember we would be, you know, sitting down to eat, and like he wouldn't talk to me. Like he wouldn't talk. Like I just remember, you know, realizing that, like, even with him, like, there were certain things that he like wasn't able to give to me, obviously, because, you know, he may have never had it. So that alpha male presence that I got with my coach, you know, as much as my dad supported me and did the best that he could, I did not get that from him. Even when it came to sports, the wanting me to succeed in sports type of thing, like seeming like he cared when, you know, I scored 4 or 5 touchdowns or whatever. I never got that from my father, but I got that from the coach. My coach would take me on 7-hour drives. He would pull me out of school, take me to Ohio State for like a combine, put me in front of the right people and all of these things. That winner's mentality, that go-getter's mentality that I fed off of. And that's what, you know, carried me through my high school experience, kept me focused through high school.
Sounds like that's what you needed. That's the energy. I mean, for me, I actually struggled with that alpha mentality and that presence because that was what my dad already had. So it was the opposite for me. Like, I actually needed nurturing, somebody to be much more nurturing and not maybe so forceful. And I didn't have the anger issue with boxing. I was the opposite. I was very methodical. So, you know, I think what we're getting at here is that you had this piece that needed adding. You needed this, somebody had to come in and add that missing piece for you. And this coach, it sounds like he was the guy to do it. And what do you think inspired him? Like, why was he so dedicated to you? It sounds like he really put himself out there.
Yeah. I mean, being from a program at Memphis, where he was from, being part of that football culture, you know, I just saw it as, you know, talent. Like he just, especially now, like, I mean, the football program in Newmarket, it's Huron Heights, Warriors is called. Like, they're the best team in Canada. They're the best high school team in Canada. So, you know, since 2001, like he has built that program up to be what it is now. So he always had that winner's mentality, and he clearly came to Canada with a mission and a vision to, you know, transform the football culture at a high school. You know, with that type of mission, you know, he's now looking for players who can get it done and do that. And he was going to invest himself and has continued to do that in guys who want to win. He's very rough. He doesn't apologize for his approach, but it's amazing to watch because, you know, guys like that, like I'll hear till the cows come home, people always talking about him behind his back. Yo, what did you think of coach? Like, oh, I don't like this about coach and all of these things. Because I work with a lot of his players too, but it's just amazing how the culture that he's established, his unapologetic way of doing things, everyone's sending their kids to him regardless. And I just find that very interesting. And I've learned a lot from him in the sense of when you believe in something, you just put your feet in the ground and you stand firm no matter what, because I've seen the result of like what he believed in. Like I've just seen it grow over the years, and it's been very inspiring. And it's something that in a lot of ways I've modeled my own life after.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things for young men when we're growing up is to develop your masculinity in a positive way, where you're actually in harnessing it in a good way, where you can be authoritative and assertive when you have to be, you can be demanding when you have to be, but you can also be restrained, you can also be disciplined. We've got this energy within us, and it expresses itself when it's not contained as anger. Like I got kicked out of school. I was fighting all the damn time. I was so reactive. I didn't know how to handle criticism. I didn't know how to handle somebody who was being mean or bullying besides, oh, I better attack because this is a threat to me. Like I thought everything was a threat. So you need someone to help you harness that. And I think society really today is doing its damnedest to make sure we don't have that. I mean, as bad as it was for us growing up, I think it's way worse now. And also there's this culture today, which speaks to what you were saying about your coach, where they are almost criminalizing masculinity. And I'm talking about good masculinity. They call it toxic. And I'm sure there's a toxic masculinity out there. There's a toxic femininity out there. There's a toxic everything. But they are trying to make it seem like men should be ashamed of that physicality and that desire to succeed, that desire to be number one. And I'm completely against that. So maybe your coach, it sounds like he's from a different era. He's the old school kind of guy who's like, listen, guys, you better get yourself sorted. We're going to win. But today, it's not what they're pushing. They're pushing actually mediocrity and sensitivity to the point of vulnerability, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a session this morning where we were talking about the difference between anger and aggression. And we were talking about how, you know, anger, when anger boils over, you are unable to think like logically. You lose your critical thinking skills. We talked about the, you know, some of the detrimental results that have happened as a result of anger, where, you know, people will talk about, oh, I blacked out. And, you know, the next thing, you know, someone's dead or someone's, you know, critically injured or something like that. And then we talked about aggression, where there is an aggressive nature to us that, like you said, needs to be learned and harnessed because it's good. It's good. And when we lose the aggression, or when the aggression is suppressed, it leads to passivity. And then it leads to where we are now in the culture, where it's passive aggressive. The culture is very passive aggressive, where, you know, that's really where you get that toxic, you know, the gossiping, and everyone's just weak and corrupted on the inside, where like they can't even deal with anything in person. They can't, you know, get through issues with people together and things like that. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a key part of the destruction of our societies and of our culture and our relationships between the sexes and between each other. You know, it's a key part of that process. But let's switch up gears a little bit then, Ezra. I really want to get in part one, before we go to part two, to talking about this gift that you realized you had. But I don't even have the words to say it. I don't know what it is. I need you to explain it to me and the listeners as to what it was, how you understood it and came about realizing it, and put it into words for me.
Yeah, one word, vision. Vision. So going back to my name, which means helper, and it means strong vision. That gift was first, realized when Saturday afternoon, 8 years old, I come downstairs regular, what I thought was a regular day. I had a routine where, I go in the kitchen, pour a bowl of cereal, I sit down, flip on Saturday afternoon cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons. That particular day, I happened to land on a football game. It was the Montreal Alouettes versus the Toronto Argonauts. And in that moment, it's like my spiritual eyes were open, where all of a sudden I had this knowing on the inside, like this deep insight where I'm gonna be there one day. I remember getting up off the couch and like immediately like just mimicking, what the guys were doing. And again, like this knowing, like it's just I knew that I knew that I knew. Fast forward 23 years old, and I'm walking into the Montreal Alouettes change room as a player. And
Wow.
I don't, yeah, like I don't, like I just know that I know that I know that, what I did at 23, I clearly saw, like I was shown that at 8 years old.
Who showed you it, Ezra?
My father did. The father I was always. That I never knew could love me the way he did, so much so that he could literally be willing to take on human form, go to the cross and shed his blood for me, resurrect and give me his spirit, Jesus Christ, Yeshua.
So you had this vision aged 8 years old, and it sounds like you knew that wasn't just a normal thought. It wasn't an idea. It wasn't something that you wished for. It wasn't something that you felt, oh, I want this. It was actually someone sending you an image and telling you, maybe in the subconscious, this is you. That's where you're going. That's the plan for you. And was that the only time it happened when you was younger, or was that the start of regular visions like this?
The start of regular. Yeah. The start of regular. Absolutely.
Talk us through that. So I'm guessing at the age of eight, you just accept, you don't know what's right or what's wrong, what's normal, what's abnormal. You don't know anything at eight. You just, oh, this is life for me. And that's now I've got these visions. So you've got these visions coming to you, but at what point do you realize that they are not commonplace, is the word I would say. So it's not something that other people are experiencing. Was there something about them that then translated into real life? Because you mentioned 23 years you was going out, but I'm guessing there was visions that were happening, and then you were seeing those enacted during your life much earlier. So you was realizing there was some connection between the visions and the real world. Is that right, or am I getting it wrong?
Absolutely. The going back to the knowing that came as a result of that, I knew that the real world was in the vision. The real world wasn't what I was seeing. I believe earlier you were sharing your experiences, like earlier on the interview you were sharing, I think it was when you were talking about your experiences you had working with other youth. With trauma and their experiences from adoption. The theme that I heard from that, how I resonated with that was nothing is what it seems. So, kind of like we were talking about our last session, my whole outlook on life was things aren't what they seem. And the dreams and the visions and these spiritual encounters were confirming that very clearly. Almost as if like I can't trust what I see. If I'm trusting what I see, I'm setting myself up to be deceived, to be led astray. So these visions and dreams, they acted like anchors for me, where I could like I said, with football, stay on a path because my real life was in the vision and would unfold based on that vision, on behalf of that vision.
And can you give me and listeners another example, Ezra, of how these visions were affecting your life? Like, was you being shown things that were about to happen? Was you being told to do things? Because I know from our past experience having this discussion that there was a specific incident that our mutual friend actually experienced with you. And maybe we'll talk about that in part two. But just during this period, whilst you was on your route to becoming that football player, was there a time or something that you can point out that will just relate to listeners the impact of these visions and how they was enabling you to be that helper and to affect the lives of others?
Sorry, repeat the question. Say that one more time.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's a representative kind of example of one of these visions that you had, what you can share with us about how it led you to behaving in a certain way or to knowing something before it happened or to affecting the life of someone else. I was wondering if there's any that stand out from your childhood where you can say, oh, I had this vision and then I went on to do this because of it. And it gave me information that I needed, you know, to achieve a task or to do something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Those would come later. It says in Romans, the apostle Paul says in Romans how the gifts and the callings of God. So, you know, we're talking about spiritual gifts right now, visions and dreams. The gifts and the callings of God are irrevocable. So whatever gift God gives, that's yours. Like you have the ability to function in that gift. So when it comes to the visions, I was functioning in that gift early on, but I wasn't activated in that gift. Meaning I could function in a gift that I didn't understand. I could have dreams and visions and have things happen to me from a young age that I would kind of be scratching my head about because, you know, these are mysterious things. But when it comes to, you know, being able to develop in that, that would happen later on. For example, for the listeners, so I work with a lot of youth, and there's two guys in particular that I had a session with before I came on this session. And he came to me yesterday and he said, I had a dream, Ezra, about you. I had a dream that same night about him. And then the other gentleman that was here as well, I had a dream about him. So I'm saying that to say because these dreams, especially in these latter times that we're living in, is going to be a powerful form of communication and a powerful way that a lot of people are led and given directions of what to do and where to go.
I've had a lot of people speak to me about dreams over the past 2-3 years, but you have to take notice of these things. So it really resonates with me what you're saying. Would it be appropriate to share the story of our friend? I know he shared it himself on the last one. We don't have to mention who it is, but that was an interesting story. And I think that really highlights how this gift you've got has been applied in real life situations and helped other people. So I'll leave it to you. Do you want to share that one, Ezra?
Something a close friend that we both know, you know, was going through. And, you know, simply put, something was revealed, what he was going through. And, you know, from there, we had the encounter where, you know, I was able to meet up with him. And I let him know that, you know what, I know. And, you know, there was an object, you know, that he was using to hurt himself that, you know, he had handed over as well. And the dreams, like really what it did, it just prepared myself to, you know, respond to the situation sensitively, appropriately, to be able to, you know, be that support system that he needed. So really
can
dreams.
Can you tell us, Ezra, sorry for interrupting, my friend, but can you tell us what was the dream or kind of impulse that you had that led you to being able to know, I've got to go and speak to my friend because he's got a problem that I can help him with or that he needs support with? Like, what was it? And how did you know to trust it and that you wasn't going to turn up there and be like, hey, I know this? And the person's like, what? You're completely way off. What was it like? Can you just talk me through it, your experience? Because I'm sure it's unique to you, how you experience these things.
It's just a knowing. It's a knowing. And usually the knowing that I get is through what I see. So like I operate in, like I'm a seer. So I see things in the spirit. Like I said, I've always functioned that way, but there was a point in time where, you know, I'm questioning what I see. I'm trying to forget about what I see, but what I see, it's like it's pursuing me. Now, you know, once I become born again, where I develop my relationship with Jesus Christ, then that's the icing on the cake right there, because the word of God says, my sheep hear my voice. So it's simply getting to understand, getting to know through relationship, the giver of the gift. So from there, when the knowing comes, it's easy to discern. You can go with it. So in the situation of what we're talking about, I simply had a knowing. And, you know, when the knowing came, I was prepared to respond the way I knew I needed to. So he also is a believer as well. So there wasn't any, like on his side, it wasn't so much, oh, how did you know that type of thing? Because he knew me. We have a relationship. He knows how I operate. So, you know, he also knew that, you know, he could trust me and know that, you know, I was the right person in that situation to respond.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's really awesome that he was able to be there for someone and that this gift actually is there for you to use practically. You know, you mentioned when you was younger that you, it's almost like you had the toolbox, but no one taught you how to use the tools. And then when you brought in your spiritual belief and you found God, you found Christ, and then you started to trust it, it's all of a sudden like that toolbox is now usable. You know, you had it and you could pick them up and mess about with them, but you didn't know how to harness them properly. You didn't know the hammer was for hammering. You didn't know the spanner was for wrenching. But once you figured it out, it's like, right, now I've got a way to use these in a practical sense. And I guess that's what I was kind of getting at with the question, was trying to relay that to listeners, you know, that you are, you know, you're not using these to sit there and write horoscopes or prophecy and kind of make some caricature of visions. It's like, no, you're actually out there in the world helping people in the same way that somebody who's got a gift for caring and healing helps people, or somebody might go to homeopathy if they've got a real affinity for taking care of other people's bodies. That's what we call a calling, right? It's when you actually find what you're meant to be doing. So absolutely. I think that's fantastic. But one thing that I wanted to get in, Ezra, before we end part one, because there's so much to unpack on this one in part two, is you had what you told me in the first interview that I did with you, a spiritual attack. And we're talking about a spiritual gift you've got, which is vision, but you actually have issues with your physical material vision. And that came later in life. So can we just talk about that before we end part one? Because I think that's a key part of this story.
100%, 100%. And I just have to add, I like how you talked about the having tools, but not knowing how to use it. And just like, you know, the tools getting sharp. It was the spiritual warfare, that the heavy, heavy spiritual warfare that sharpened. That is exactly what was used to sharpen the gift, because the gift was not really separate from me. Like it's really a part of who I am. So like I couldn't just try to like get it away when the attacks came and all of these things. I couldn't say, okay, I'm putting the gift on the shelf and I'm running away. Like it's really something that I had to endure through and really had no choice to develop in, because it was connected to my identity.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Ezra. I'm really glad that you managed to do that, because I think now you're using that as you should in the world for good. And can you just tell us about how your physical sight disappeared and what happened there? And also how you interpreted that, because I think that is going to lead us very nicely into part two.
Yep. 2022. My wife noticed that my eye had been protruding. So like, you know, over time, just sticking out more and more. I remember playing it off for a while. We had actually, my wife and I had recently been kicked out of our church that we were attending. I was a youth pastor for 8 years. That's a whole other story I'm sure we'll get into, but that's what I was doing at the time. I was youth pastoring, and yeah, like I said, my wife discovered that my eye was protruding. So, you know, eventually over her really pushing me to go get it diagnosed, I did a couple tests, and I remember after that getting a call maybe a month later, several weeks later, and I remember the girl telling me, if you're driving, you need to pull over. And, you know, I've never really had a feeling like that, where it's like my heart sank. All of us, like instantly, I know something's wrong. Those aren't the words that, you know, you want to hear from your doctor. And she told me, we've discovered a tumor behind your right eye. And all I know, all I've ever known, I remember being a kid and hearing people had tumors. And I always connected tumors to cancer, like things being cancerous. So when she said I had a tumor, right away, I said I have cancer. Again, a very, very mysterious, like just not knowing how to deal with the news. I drove to my parents' house, and I remember just sitting at the table for lunch and just shook. Yeah.
I mean, it's so crazy, actually, because now you was in the exact same situation, but the shoe was on the other foot. You was going to tell them something completely shocking and unexpected that was going to change their world, just like they did when you was a boy and you got sat down and your mum told you you're adopted. Now right. You're doing the same thing the opposite way around. And what was that like for them? Like, how did they respond?
Yeah, no, that's it's very interesting you put it like that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess like any parent would, like, you know, they were just as shocked as I was. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't really much, you know, for them to say. You know, I told them I'd be going through next steps to find out if it was cancerous or not. And really the process of, you know, dealing with that, you know, taking the steps to get it removed, that whole process started.
And let's wrap this one up for part one and we'll pick back up in part two, Ezra. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it has taken your sight in the eye, hasn't it?
Yeah, I went, I had two major surgeries and I did go completely blind, yes.
Yeah, and that's in the right eye. And how's your vision in the other eye, Ezra? Is that okay still?
Yes, it's great. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And I guess the reason why this is so connected to the story, besides just being a major life event, but it's really important for the story because you actually see, and that's the word to say, you see in many ways, but you see this as a spiritual attack on you because of your vision, your spiritual vision. That's how you interpreted this, wasn't it?
You're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't even say interpret. It's just clear. Like I just know, again, it's that knowing. Like I know that it's not by accident that how I function, not for myself, but how I function to help many people who have been impacted by that, that if there is a real devil who comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and there is, that it's not by accident he's going after that aspect of me. He's going after the eye, the vision.
Okay, Ezra. Well, I think that's a fantastic place to leave it for part one. Thank you so much for your time, Ezra. I really appreciate you coming back on to share this story with listeners. In part two, we're going to talk about spiritual warfare. We're going to continue with your story, but then we're going to zoom out because I think right now in the world, spiritual warfare is reaching fever pitch and it's manifesting in everything: physical, kinetic warfare, psychological warfare, weaponizing the weather, weaponizing the media, weaponizing Hollywood, everything. It's manifesting so overtly. So I want to talk about that and just get into a conversation about it with you because I think you're the man to have that conversation with. Before we leave, Ezra, is there any way I can direct listeners to your content or to what you're doing so they can find out more about you and your life and your business even?
Yeah. I mean, you can check out my website. It's www.totalmandevelopment.com. My Instagram as well, active on Instagram, is @totalmandevelopment. And then, like those are two of the platforms that we're most active on. You know, you could find us, check out what we do, and absolutely reach out if anything. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ezra. And one final thing actually that I wanted to just add to that is, you know, we had this conversation last time and we had three of us in that conversation. There was me, you, and our mutual friend. And it was an extremely powerful conversation because three guys all kind of relating our own personal stories. And it was just a really powerful conversation. Mm-hmm. And I remember I came away from that episode. It was really late at night. I think it was about 2 a.m. and I just couldn't sleep. I just said, wow. I said that. I said that episode is going to touch someone's life. I said, I don't know who, I don't know how many, but there's somebody out there and that episode is going to touch their life. And I came back about 3 or 4 days later, which is usual, to edit that episode. And I was going to get it ready. And for the life of me, I just couldn't find it. Yeah. It wasn't there. The file wasn't there. And sure enough, It was gone. And I don't know if I deleted it, if I had done, like, I just don't know how I got it off my computer if I deleted it. But for whatever reason, it was gone. And I thought about it and I was on a run. And then just in my head, the phrase came to me, spiritual warfare. So I reached out to you just the other day. I hadn't spoken to you since. I thought about it so many times. And I was talking to somebody else about you. And I said, oh, I know a guy called Ezra. I said, we was talking about spiritual warfare. I said, he's got a gift and he knows about it. And I said, and we had this experience where he had his vision taken from him. And this episode was then taken. And I was like, that was a part of spiritual warfare. And I said, now I need to put that right. And I'm going to get Ezra back on the show and we're going to make that episode. So Ezra, that's this episode. So I really appreciate you coming back and sharing it again. And we are not going to allow this episode to get taken from us. And if this one disappears, we're doing it a third time, my friend. So get yourself ready just in case. Thank you so much for your time, Ezra. I look forward to part two.
Awesome. Okay.
What you are basic. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence.
Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.